Thank you.
And we're holding on Kuflamet Ches Amud Beis by the Mishnah, three lines from the bottom.
May I ask what Gemara we're holding for?
Baba Basra.
Well, good. Thank you.
In the previous Mishnah, we had the case where the father, where father gives the where father gives the nechassim, gives the property to his children while he's alive. A kosev nechassav levanav. He wrote out a document saying that he's giving his property to his children. So we said that what happens basically, and he makes it in such a way that it should be mehayoyim al-achamisa, that it'll be. That'll be it takes effect as of today and after he dies, which means we said that what happens is the goof of it, the actual land itself, for example, already belongs to the son as already belongs to the son or sons as of when he writes it. The payrus, the produce or whatever it is, the earnings from it belong to him until he dies. So now the Mishnah continues going on in that case. Ha'av toilah shel machil, the father, when he wrote out such a document, again, since he has the payrus until he dies, so he's able to pick the fruit that grew from that karka, and he umachil l'chol mishiyutza, and he can give it to eat to whoever he wants, because again, the payrus are his to do with what to do whatever he wants with. So anything that he picks, then he can give to whoever he wants, because the payrus are going to belong to his son only after he dies. But on the other hand, suppose that he picked some of the fruit and then left it picked, and then he died. That also goes to the Yoshin. We wouldn't say that that would actually. So we had the case previously, rather we had the case. Where the father, yes, we had the case where the father had written out the nechassim to his son and was saying, so now if he so if he had if he had detached payrus, so anything that remain anything that remain anything that remains attached to the ground, even if it's ready to be picked, is going to belong to his son, as opposed to what we're saying, what he left unpicked belongs to the Yoshim. So we're going to see in the Gemara, in other words, so the difference is, so there's a difference in this regard, as the Gemara is going to clarify between his whether he gave the Nechassim to his son versus somebody else. So that's the
The question would be because that was not at the beginning of the Mishnah, so the concept of
no, 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 yeah.
the cup, yes. What if you put me on page, what nechassim and what
Okay, nechassim means
karka?
nechassim means property. Nechassim
No,
means pro
I know what
yeah.
that means. I
Okay,
know what taluf means,
fine.
but we want to know
Okay, so the
which
case
case
was
that we're
the
talking about.
case again was that the father had written out a document while he's alive saying that he's giving these nechassim to his son, as of today and after he dies. So that means as of now, he's giving to his son already the guf, the actual nechassim itself, for example, the land, the payrus, the produce he retains ownership of until he dies. Now then, the Mishnah is saying that he can pick the fruit and give it to whoever he wants, meaning, in other words, that because again, we learned in the previous Mishnah, he would be able to give his payrus, his rights in payrus, to whoever he wants. But now we're saying what he left on what he left picked goes to the Yoshim, goes to all of his heirs, not just to the particular son to whom he gave this matana, to whom
That's
he gave
being
this
the
present.
properties, the what
Yeah.
belongs to the Balabas.
Right. So the Gemara clarifies, so Tolush ain mechubaloi. So you're telling me only what he picked goes to all the Yoshim, but what he left attached to the ground goes only to the son who received the gift. So in other words, so he has nechassim, he has, let's say he has sons, Reuven, Shimon, Levi, etc. He had written out a document saying that this particular field goes to Reuven, mehayom al-achamisa. So what we're saying is that what we're saying is that that what he if he picks some of the fruit before he dies, then it's going to all of his children, not just to Reuven who received this field, but to all the children. But if there's anything attached to the ground when he dies, then that goes exclusively to Reuven. The problem with that is Vatanya, what we learn in a Braisa, shomenis that we evaluate how much the produce that that is attached to the ground. This is a braisa that that says that suppose we talked about in the previous Mishnah, suppose that the son had sold his portion, his what he owns, which is the guf, and then the father died. So now we said that so now we're saying that if there's anything that's attached to the ground, then we're going to figure out how much that's worth, and it's going to shomana samochabarin lolekeach, and we're going to figure out and we're going to figure out then the buyer, the one who had bought that property previously from the son, would have earned that, but instead, since it's attached to the ground, it ends up going to the yoshim, because again, once the father dies, then it's all going to the son, to whom he wrote out a document saying that he's entitled to it. So we see, and we're saying that the lekeach figures out how much the produce is worth, and that lekeach pays it to the yoshim, to all the sons. So we see, in other words, that the in short, the lekeach owns whatever is still attached to the ground. And if there's peiros, though, since he only owns the actual ground itself, he doesn't own the peiros, mm-hmm. then therefore we have to give them to the yoshim, and he has to compensate them for that. But when it comes to So in other words, what we're saying is that even when it's attached to the ground, we're saying that he's not entitled to collect those. He has to give them to the yoshim. But here the Mishnah is saying that when he wrote out a document giving this particular field to one of his sons, then that son is entitled to take the produce that's attached to the ground. Because we said only mashi niach tolush. Only what was detached from the ground goes to all the yoshim. So what's the difference? Oh. Why is it in the case where the son sold the property to somebody else? We're saying that the lekeach is not entitled to that produce that's attached to the ground. He has to give it to the yoshim, because again, until now, he only had the goof of the land, which was the goof of the karka, which is what the son had sold to him. But now that the father dies, and now the property goes completely to the yoshim, then he has to give it to them. Whereas here we're saying that the produce that's attached to the ground, the one who received the present gets to keep.
Very good.
Let's learn the answer, and then maybe it'll become clear. So the answer is, Ola says there's loy kasha, there's no contradiction. Kan bibnoi kan ba'acher. It depends whether the recipient of the gift was just his son, whether that son in turn, we're not talking about an arm missioner where the son sold it to somebody else. So now the father wants to give his son as much as possible. So therefore he intends to give him even the payrus that are still attached to the ground. So therefore, in our Mishnah, only what was detached from the ground, was saying Harei Ushal Yoshin, it goes to all the Yoshin, it goes to all the children, but whatever was attached to the ground still goes exclusively to the one son to whom he gave this gift. As opposed to Kan Ba'acher, as opposed to the Braisa, is talking about where the son, in turn, sold it to somebody else, or for that matter, if the father had written a document saying that he's giving it to somebody else, not his son, then we would say that he doesn't get produce that's attached to the ground. And the difference is, and the difference is because a person's das is closer to his son, so therefore his son, he wants to give more than he would give anybody else. So his son, we can assume we would want to give him even the produce that's attached to the ground. So again, we're saying in the Mishnah, therefore, so we have three types of produce in our Mishnah. We have the father detaches produce while he was alive, and he can give or sell it to whoever he wants. It's his to do with, as long as he's alive. Second of all, you have produce that he detached from the ground before he died, that he picked before he died, but then he died. That we're saying doesn't go exclusively to the one son. It goes to all the yoshim. And then we have produce that's still attached to the ground. That goes exclusively to the son to whom he gave this property, because he's close to his son, and therefore he wants to give him as much as possible, including, even we're saying, having given him the goof. And now the son, from now on, is going to get the payrus as well. Then he also gets the payrus that are attached to the ground when the father dies. As opposed to, based on the Braisa, what we're saying is, if in a parallel case where the son had sold the property to somebody else and then the father died, or where the father himself had written out a document to somebody else, then we would say the first two are still similar. The ones that he detached, then he can do whatever he wants with. He can sell them while he's alive. The ones that he the ones that he picked but didn't do anything with go to all the Yoshim, and the ones that are attached to the ground, though, those also go to the Yoshim. And the reason is because when it's somebody else, not his son, then we say his das is not so close to him, and therefore he wants his children to have as much as possible.
So now the question would be on the Mishnah, or the Rav mentioned it also, but I just heard like two already similar cases, but Talush, if it's still on the ground, and was that cut?
If it wasn't cut, that's what we're saying. If it's mechubar, if it was a father and if it's a father and a son, then it goes exclusively to the son to whom he gave the gift of that land. The one son, or whichever sons, he specifically wrote out the document saying that he's giving it to them.
Or the whole family, whatever. Like,
it may be. No, again, okay, we're talking about he wrote out a document over here saying, I am giving this to one of my children or to certain one of my. If he didn't. Without that, all of them are going to Yaushin it anyway. We're talking about where he's trying to override the usual rules of Yerusha by writing a document saying, I am giving this particular piece of property to this son of mine or to these sons of mine. So that's what we're talking about. Okay, fine. Okay. Mishnah says, Biniach bonim gdolim uktanim. Now, what happens when the father dies if he left behind older sons and younger sons? So here we're talking about, forget about this whole thing of that he wrote out Nechosim. Here we're talking about that he just died without any specific will, and therefore the Yerusha is going to be split up among his children in the usual way, one portion for each one, a double portion for the Bechor. The twist is over here that some of them are already older, and they're able to support themselves, and others of them are children, and they still need to be supported out of the estate. Now, you have like this. We have to distinguish between what's called in halacha parnosa and mezoinus. Mm-hmm. Parnosa is things like expenses for clothing. Mezoinus is expenses for food. Now, the expenses for clothing are called parnosa. Those are going to be more for older children, in the sense that in the sense that the older ones who now are already they're already going out in the world, they need, for example, more outfits, they need more different things like that, because they need to be dressed respectively. So therefore their clothing is likely to cost more. On the other hand, when it comes to mizonos, when it comes to food, the younger children typically they eat more, but in other words, the expenses for food for them are going to be tend to be larger. Partly because kids waste food, and partly because different, not just food, but other day-to-day expenses like that for children tend to be more for adults.
It reminds me the lesson of the Chumash of getting married and the three things that...
That's shared of Sosa by Nasa, that's something else. That's not relevant over here. Okay, so... So there are older children and younger children. The older ones are not entitled to parnosa, to a greater amount of money for expenses for their clothing at the expense of the younger ones. So in other words, the older ones can't say, you know what, let's not divide up the property. Let's continue to manage all of our father's estate as an undivided property. And we have larger expenses for clothing, so therefore we're going to end up taking a larger percentage for our clothing than you children will. And vice versa, the children are not entitled to a larger amount of mizonos, of food and other daily expenses at the expense of their elder brothers. Rather, what we do is, we're going to have to divide up the estate, and each one will have his portion. And for the older ones, then more of it will go towards their clothing, and for the younger ones, more of it will go towards their food. So the Mishnah says, Elachok and Beshava, so they divide it up evenly, The Rashba actually says that this is only if one side or the other is going to protest. If they want to, if they don't say one way or the other, then gesunt hate, they can leave it undivided and they can do whatever they want. They're shutfin, they're considered in effect partners, they can be moichel to one another. But if the older ones are going to protest, wait, you kids, you're using up a lot more proportionately for food than we are, we don't like that. Or the younger ones say, you know what, and you older brothers of ours, you're using up more of it proportionately for clothing than we are, then yeah, that gives a basis to say, let's just divide up the property. Mm-hmm. Continues the Mishnah, Nisu Agdolim, what happens When it comes to getting married, nosultodom, whatever. If the older boys are getting married and they're paying for their wedding expenses, again, out of this undivided property. So then yisuaktanim, then the children, the younger ones, when it comes time for them to get married, can do the same kind of thing. So let's say they didn't divide up the estate. So now let's say that one of the older boys is getting one of the older boys is getting married after the father died. He's spending, I don't know, 50,000 or whatever it is on the wedding. So now when it comes to the next son's the next son, he's also entitled to take out 50,000 from it and use for his wedding and so forth. On the other hand, the im omru ktanim, on the other hand, if the children say in a different scenario, we want to get married in the same style that you older brothers got married, then we don't listen to them. Rather, whatever their father gave them, he gave them, meaning the Gemara is going to explain, that's talking about a different case. There we're talking about where some of the brothers got married while the father was alive. And so now, while the father was alive, let's say he had spent, to continue our example, he had spent 50,000 on his older son's wedding. So now the younger sons are going to say, after their father died, you know what, when we grow up, we also want that amount. Then no, that we don't necessarily say. That we say, we go according to that. Then we say, whatever was given while he was alive, then fine. But after he died, then no, they're not entitled to an extra larger expense. They're not entitled to an extra larger share of the estate in order to pay for their weddings. Whatever is available is available.
Exactly, because you're going to go back.
Okay.
If you have a large family, so how are you going to divide like 50,000?
God.
Good.
We don't need to. Okay. Good. Fine. Next, continues the Mishnah. Hiniach bonus gdolus uktanus. Now, what about if instead of boys, what if the father left behind only daughters? So then you have similar dinim. Now, of course, the daughters inherit instead of the sons, but the dinim are broadly the same, but you have as follows. First of all, the first part of what we said in the Mishnah, that the older ones tend to spend more on clothing and the younger ones more on food. The same rules apply over there. The older ones are not able to say if the younger ones protest, well, we're entitled to a larger amount for clothing, because the younger ones are able to protest and say, yeah, but proportionally that means you're taking a larger share of the estate for that, so let's just split up the estate and then you'll take out of your own funds. And similarly, the younger girls are not entitled to extra food at the expense of the older ones. So in that regard, they're similar to boys. So again, they divide up evenly. In the case of girls, there isn't even a chelik b'chora, because only a male b'chora gets a double portion. So here they're going to split exactly evenly, and that's that. Again, as the Rashba says, if they didn't protest, gezunta hate, they can do whatever they want. But once there are protests, then this is how they would do it. Then they have a right to say that.
Thank you. Lord.
Continues the Mishnah. Sure. Nisug doilus, again, if the older girls got married first after the father died, yisuktanus. So now the younger ones can get married in the same style, given, for example, the older one used X amount for her wedding. So the next one, when she gets married, is also entitled to X amount out of the estate. The im omruktanus harenu noises kedekshin asasamatem. If the younger girls say, well, you older girls got married while our father was alive and he gave X amount for your wedding, so we want to be married in the same style, ein shemin lahen, then we don't listen to them. So far, that's the same as with the boys. But now the Mishnah mentions there is a detail when it comes to girls versus boys that's going to be different. There is a certain chumra when it comes to girls inheriting from their father versus when the boys inherit. Namely, if there are both boys and girls, as we're going to learn at the beginning of the next parak, the boys yarshin everything. What's supposed to happen then is that they are in turn are going to support their daughter. They're going to support their sisters until their sisters are old enough to get married or to start a life of their own. So now, if there are both boys and girls, then so. So those girls are going to be entitled to mizonos, and we're not going to say, the boys can't say, yeah, but you little girls are eating a lot of the nechasim, because that's their responsibility, as the yorshim is to provide for their sisters. Whereas on the other hand, ve'en mizonos al habanos, but on the other hand, the same rule would not apply if there's only girls involved, and the older, and all of them have inherited, and now the older sisters are saying to the younger ones, wait, you're using up a lot of the estate for the mizonos, then they have a right to say, you know what, that's true, in that case we should just split up the estate, and that would be that, rather than, again, if it was boys, they wouldn't have the right to say, well, in that case, tough luck to you guys. No, because they're responsible to support their sisters. So in other words, in short, what we're saying is that the boys are responsible to support the girls, but girls are not responsible to support the girls out of their own funds. Rather, what they do is they divide up the estate, and each one's going to get her portion, whichever ones of them are ktanis, of course, are going to have an apotropos of necessity. They're going to have a caretaker to take care of things for them. But the point is that it doesn't have to be at the expense of the older girls. So that's what the Mishnah is saying. Zechloim rebonis mebonim. There you have a chumra when it comes to girls inheriting versus boys inheriting. I'll be Kabbalah, by the way. There's the idea that we have Zoh and Malchus, and we have Zoh is male and Malchus is female, and Malchus receives from Zoh. So in that sense, because it's that way. But Pnimius Inyanim is why it comes down here in Halacha that the boys have to provide for their, that the sons have to provide for their sisters.
Yeah.
Okay. The Gemara starts off. Omar Rava. Now, we said in the Mishnah, again, that when it comes to the older versus younger boys, we said that the older ones tend to spend more on clothing, that the older ones tend to spend more on clothing, but they can't do that at the expense of the younger ones. If the younger ones say, wait, this is too much, then we say, divide up the estate, and you'll pay for your clothing out of your own pocket. So Rava says, "Hai gadol achi de lavash veichsi mibesa." If the eldest of the brothers, who is the one usually who handles the estate, so it's the yisomim, will gain from the fact when he's wearing nice clothing, because then people are more likely to pay attention to what he says. So de lavash veichsi mibesa, if he's wearing and clothing himself with at the expense of the estate, my de ovad. Then what he did, and in other words, we can't say that they should be compensated an equal amount. Now, l'chatchila, the Rashbam says he shouldn't waste his brother's money to that extent, but b'di'evad he did it. Okay. And then it's a done deal. That's according to the Rashbam. The Tosfos Reed actually says that even l'chatchila it may mean Bastin would be allowed to wear it. Bastin may allow him to if he's actually actively working on the nechasim and helping to improve them. So the Gemara says, didn't the Mishnah say that the elder children don't get to pay for their clothes at the expense of the estate at the expense of the younger ones? The answer is masnisin b'shorcha, because our Mishnah is talking about a shorcha, a person who wrote an odom bottle. He doesn't do anything for a living. He just sits around, so they're not gaining anything from him wearing better clothes. Tosfos brings actually an interesting point. The word may not be shorcha with a resh, but rather shadcha with a dalad, and it comes from a word that means quiet in Aramaic. The word shiduchim actually is distantly related to that in that sense as well, in the sense that a shiduch means that not necessarily it's done quietly, but it's more like it calms things down. You have like a girl may be worried about what's going to be with me. Am I ever going to get married? And then somebody comes and proposes to her, and they have a shiduchim, and it helps calm her and make her feel better. So therefore, it's called shiduchim. Mm-hmm. So here also the word may be shodcha, which means like a person who's quiet and doesn't really he doesn't make waves, and he's not doing anything in the outside world. So therefore, so the brothers are not gaining anything from him wearing nice clothing. So the mask shorcha pshita. Well, if he's like that, then of course it's pashut that he can't pay for his clothing at the expense of the estate. What's the chiddush? And the answer is Ma'u d'tema. Still, you might have thought Nichol hu d'le ninval. Still, you might think that the brothers don't want that their eldest brother should be going around without proper clothing and proper shoes. So maybe they have enough, maybe at least on the grounds of Derech Eretz for their older brother, they don't want that he should be left without proper food, without proper shoes and clothing, and therefore they're willing to be meichel to him. Kamash v'lam, therefore Rava is telling us no. If the older brother is actually involved in doing things in the outside world on their behalf, where he's transacting business and whatever on their behalf and working to improve and increase the estate, then fine. The Gemara tells us in Bava Kama actually that they prefer ki hechid l'shtamun mila is the expression the Gemara uses over there. They like it that way that people will listen to what he has to say when he's dressed respectably. So then that's considered an expense that's on their behalf and he's entitled to take that out of the estate. But otherwise, if he's a shorcha or shadcha, a lazy or quiet kind of person who's not doing that, then no. If he wants to pay for his clothing, let him pay it out of his own pocket. The Mishnah had said, Nisuk nosuk dolem yisuk tanim. Now, the Mishnah had said, if the older boys get married, then the younger boys can get married in the same style, meaning the same amount of expenses. But the Mishnah had then continued that if the tanim say, we want to get married in the same style that you did, we said, ein shoymin lahem, we don't listen to them. So what are the two cases? My comma, what does the Mishnah mean? Means if the older brothers got married after the father died and they took out X amount for their expenses, then each of the following boys can also do the same thing after the father died. But if the older ones got married while their father was alive and the father gave them X amount for it, and then the younger sons say after the father dies, we want to get married in the same style as you did, and then we should be entitled to that amount. That we don't listen to them. What the father gave them as the Yerusha, he gave them, and fine. If they're going to end up splitting up the estate, and then they'll have out of their portion, they can go and do their wedding expenses.
How do you judge the wedding expenses then?
So that's the point. In other words, So what we're saying is, if none of them got married while the father was alive, then what we're saying is that the that each one so they don't have to split up the estate. The older ones might say, you know what, I'm getting married now, I need $50,000 for it, so I'm going to take that out and I'm going to do that. So now when each of the other ones comes of age and is ready to get married, then they're entitled to say, we're also entitled to that. You can't say, but we're doing it at your expense because you did your wedding at our expense. But if we're saying if some of them got married while the father was alive, we're not going to say, well, that indicates that each one needs X amount, and therefore, like, that should be earmarked within the Yerusha. We don't say that. Rather, we say that each one, you're entitled to a certain amount for clothing and food and whatever. And if you want to go beyond that, for example, for wedding expenses, then fine, we'll split up the estate. You'll have your portion. You pay for whatever you want for your chasana out of that.
But exactly, what were we talking about? He's not obligated. I don't have it. I have 20. I don't have 50.
Okay, then go
get married.
What does a person do in general if they don't have enough money? They go and raise money. Whatever. That's not the rest of the brother's problem. Okay. Then we have the case of the Mishnah where he left older and younger girls. So now we said in the Mishnah, as far as the dinim of who's entitled to what is basically the same as with boys, with the exception we said that when it comes to when there are boys who inherited the estate and they have sisters, then the brothers have to support their sisters until they're of age, as we're going to talk about at the beginning of the next parak. Whereas when it's girls only, then they don't have to do that. If the older girls start thinking to themselves, you know what, our younger sisters are eating an awful lot, then they can say, you know what, let's split up the estate and you can take care of your own mazonis from now on.
Okay.
So the Gemara mentions in this connection, And the Mishnah had also mentioned the point also as far as the weddings, same kind of thing, that if some of them got married while the father was alive, then the younger ones are entitled to the same amount for their respective weddings. But, we said that if all of them got married after the father passed away, then each is entitled to an equal amount for their respective weddings, but otherwise not. So the Gemara says, Sholach lei avur b'gniva l'rava. So avur b'gniva sends a message to Rava asking him as follows, Yilamdenu Rabbeinu. Rebbe, teach us. What about Lovsa? What if a woman, before she's married, she borrowed money to she borrowed money for her food and other expenses, the ochla, and she ate, she used that for her food and other expenses, the umda v'nissis. Then she got married before she paid back the debt. And now when she gets married, then as usual, her husband becomes the owner of all the property she brings into the marriage, as nichse melug or nichse tzayin barzol, as the case may be. The question is, baal lekeach havi or yodash havi? Do we consider the husband to be a buyer, or do we consider him to be some, or do we consider him to be a yorish? The question is not even after she dies. The question is while she's still alive, even. The point is that there are going to, there are various halachas, as we've had in many places in this parak, where there are differences between a sale and a yerusha. So in particular, one thing we can ask over here says, Avua Bagniva, Lekeach Habi, would we say that the father, would we say that the husband, rather, is considered a buyer? And therefore, now she borrowed money. There was no shtar necessarily for that money that she borrowed. It's a milva al peh. So it's only a verbal loan. So a milva al peh ain't a gover min al kochus. Now such a milva cannot be collected from buyers. So therefore, we tikkun olam, because otherwise nobody's going to want to buy property, because they're always going to be worried that there might be an outstanding loan over there. So if we make the husband to be like a lekeach, then we would say that this person that she borrowed money from is not able to take away anything from the husband in satisfaction and payment of the debt. Because the husband can tell him, look, I bought this property from my wife. You don't have a shtar for your loan, so tough luck. If you can find nechosim that still belong to my wife, nechosim b'nei chorin, gezuntahet, collect from them. But you don't, because all of it belongs to me, one way or the other. So therefore, you're out in the cold. So wait. Oy duma yodash havi, or maybe we consider the husband to be an heir, or milval peh gave him an ayoshin, and a milval peh can be collected from Yoshim, at least from the land that belongs to Yoshim. So that's the question. Omalei, so Rava answers him, Tanena. That we can prove from our Mishnah. That's why we're bringing in this case over here, is because it relates to our Mishnah. We said in our Mishnah, Nosu Gdolus, if the older girls got married after the father had passed away, Yisuk Tanis, then the younger girls can get married at the same style. Now, my lav, shouldn't we understand what the Mishnah means is like this? Nosu Gdolus Labal. It means that if the older girls got married, and they took some of the money that's undivided, and they brought that money into their husband, they labal, they gave it to the husband as nichse malug, yisuk tanis mi baal. Then what we're saying is, when the younger girls get married, they are entitled to get their portion even by taking it away from the older girls' husbands. So in other words, they can say like this, that we're assuming when the older girl got married, for example, what she did is, she took all of the undivided estate and gave it to her husband as nichse malug. Now, when the next girl gets married, then she's what?
Doesn't belong to her. She can't.
It was undivided. So
a bunch of people.
But it hasn't been divided up yet. So now we're saying when the next girl gets married, then she's entitled to go to the husband of her older sister, and say, wait, she took more of her share of the estate. Okay, she didn't maybe take all of it, whatever. She took more than her fair share or whatever. So therefore, so look, I have a share in this estate as well. So give me back some of it, and I'll use it for my wedding and so forth. So therefore, so that would mean that yes, you're able to collect from the husband like a yodish. Otherwise, how can the younger girl collect from him? Yeah. The Ritva points out that, look, I mean, if the nechosim are still be'ein, if they still exist tangibly, then of course the girls get their property either way. I mean, otherwise it would be basically like gzela. What we're talking about over here is, let's say, so she, the older girl, had gotten married. She brought it into the marriage. And since then, those nechosim have been consumed. So they have other nechosim. They're not completely impoverished, let's say. But still, those particular nechosim that she brought in are long gone. Imagine, for example, let's say, you know, you could have a simple example. Let's say the nechosim included avodim, and by the time the next girl is ready to get married, those avodim have long since died, let's say. So she has other avodim still, but that's already, the question is whether the husband is considered like a lekeach or like a yodish over here. So the Mishnah seems to be implying, says Rava, that yes, the next daughter is entitled to take away from the husband of the first one. That would mean that he's like a lekeach, that he's like a yodish. However, Wait, the Gemara says, noy, not necessarily is that what the Mishnah means, because the Mishnah may mean nisug dolus labal. All it means is that if the older girls got married and they took some of the Yerusha to for their wedding expenses and for their ksuba and whatever, for their nichsim alug, yisuk tanis labal, then each one of the next girls, when they get married, can also take an equal amount. We're not talking about collecting from the husband. We're talking about, in other words, like we explained to begin with, the Balabatish and the Mishnah that we said, in other words, the first girl took out, let's say, $50,000 to pay for her wedding expenses, and some of that is also going to become nixamalug. The next girl, when she comes along, gets 50,000 in the same way. We don't mean, in other words, that we're talking about that the first girl took so much that now the next girl has to go to her husband and say, we need to claw some of that back for my wedding. We're not necessarily talking about that. So therefore, our Mishnah is not necessarily a proof for one way or the other for what Avroha Bagniva is asking about.
Excuse me, Rav. I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
I forgot.
No.
Nichsim Alug.
Nichsim Alug is property that the wife brings into the marriage where she herself actually owns the property, but the husband is entitled to the payrus of it. So therefore, in other words, the husband has a shibud on it for as long as he is alive, and as long as she is alive, he's entitled to the payrus of that property every year. So if it's a field, he's entitled to the produce. If it's an eved, he's entitled to the work of that eved and so forth, to the earnings of that eved and so forth, and the actual guf belongs to the wife. Yeah.
Exactly.
Okay.
Why only to the wife and not the husband?
Because that's how Nichsim Alug works.
Okay.
Onward. So therefore, so fine. So our Mishnah, in other words, is not really a proof one way or the other. But the Gemara says, "Eini." So is that so? You're going to understand the Mishnah that way. Rabchia clearly says that it means that if the older girls got married and took some of the property and used it as nichsim alug, then the next girl, when she gets married, is entitled to take mibal from that husband of her older sister and claw it back and use it for her and use it for her expenses. So the Gemara says, yes, that's true, but still, Dilma shiny parnosa de isla kola. You know what, though? It may be different when it comes to parnosa, specifically meaning wedding expenses and things like that. That's a well-known kind of thing. It has a coil. So in other words, the whole idea is why are we saying that you can't collect from buyers when it comes to a milval peh, is because there's no coil for it. People don't know that there was this loan taken out, and therefore they don't realize. So now they're going to say, look, I bought property from this person in good faith. I didn't know that he previously borrowed money, and now there's a shibud. It would make it impossible to buy. I wouldn't have bought it if I'd known that. But when it comes to parnosa, when it comes to wedding expenses, that kind of thing becomes well known. So therefore, it's the equivalent of as if she borrowed money with a shtar. Therefore, yes, we would be able to collect from a lekeach, even if we consider the husband to be a lekeach, that he bought it, and we would still be able to take from him. So the answer is, in that particular case, we might consider the husband like a lekeach, but that doesn't necessarily show that in other cases, in the case that we started with, where she had borrowed money when she was single to just for her daily expenses, and now the question is, can the person she borrowed from, can he collect from her husband? Can he take away from her husband? Not necessarily. Maybe in that case, there's no coil, as opposed to here we're talking about when the older girl got married and that has a coil. Has a coil, and people know about it. It becomes well known. In fact, Rabbeinu Gershom says it's not so much the coil is not so much because of the shibud. The coil is more the very fact that she took X amount for her parnosa, that becomes well known. The fact that she got married and people know that she used X amount of the estate for that purpose.
Yeah.
Okay. So therefore, that doesn't really prove one way or the other about Avuah Bagniva's case. Well, the Gemara continues, Amalei Rapapa L'Rava. So the Papa says to Rava, I can bring you a proof from another case. Lav Hainu D'Shalach Rovin Be'igarte. After all, this case that Avuah Bagniva is asking about, again, where a woman had borrowed money when she was single, and now the question is whether her husband can be forced to pay it back out of his, whether Nechosim can be taken away from him in payment of the debt. Isn't this the same kind of thing that Rovin sent in a letter? You have a case where a person died and he left over an almana, a widow and a daughter. Now each one of them is entitled to mezonos from his estate. The widow is entitled by tnoi ksuba. That the part of the tnoi ksuba is that after he dies, she's entitled to continue living in his house and be supported out of his nechasim as long as she's an almana. And the daughter also is to be supported out of the estate. So then the almana gets supported out of the estate. Nisus Abbas, and if, now the daughter, now we're talking about though, the daughter after all is the Yodish, because we're talking about he didn't leave any sons. He left only an almana and a daughter. The almana doesn't inherit from him. The daughter inherits. So the daughter is the actual heir, but meanwhile, the almana continues to get supported as long as she's alive or until she gets remarried. Because it's Tznoi Ksuba, one of the Tznoim that the husband took on himself. When he married her, is that his wife is going to be supported. Yeah. Nisus Abbas, now if that daughter gets married and she brings it in, it's into the marriage, still the almana gets supported out of the property. Mesa Habas, what happens when the daughter dies and her husband now yarshins her property, as we learned earlier in the Perek, that the husband yarshins from his wife. What happens now? Omer of Yehuda ben Achoisa, Shereb Yosi ben Chanina, or Reb Chanina. So, Shereb Yehuda, the nephew of Reb Yosi, Reb Chanina, says, Al Yodi Hayamaisa, such a case happened that was brought to me, to a Din Torah, V'omru Amonosin, Yizonis Menachosav, and they said the Almana is still entitled to collect. To collect her mezonos from the nechasim until she either gets remarried or she demands her ksuba or the yoshim give her ksuba. In all those cases, then at that point she forfeits mezonos. But until then, she's entitled to mezonos. And the point is, even though the daughter is dead and now it's in the hands of a third party, the daughter's husband, nevertheless, the almana is still entitled. The almana, his mother-in-law, is still entitled to be supported out of the nechasim. So the Papa says, Iyamet b'shlema yodesh havi. If you tell us that the husband for this purpose is considered a yodesh, mishumachi amanosin izonis menachosav. Well, then we understand very well why this din is that even though. Now, mazana ishav abanis, to support the wife and support the daughters when there are sons who inherited and the daughters are only getting mazonis, which is not our case over here. But fine, let's focus on the almana. The almana herself, the fact that she's supported is also one of those things that she can't collect from nechasim mishubadim. She can't collect from property that's under a shibud to somebody else for the same reason. It's an open-ended thing, and you never know how much it's going to be, and people would be afraid to buy property if they know there's such a shibud existing. So the almana cannot collect from the chosim mishabadim. Yet we're saying over here that she can collect from the husband. If you say the husband is considered a yodish and there's no shibud involved, it's just that yaushins from his wife. Well, then fine. Mishum hachi amanosin izonis minachosim. That explains why the almana can be supported out of the nechasim because there's no shibud. It's still considered that she's collecting from bnei chorin. Eli amat lekeachavi, but if you say the husband is considered a buyer, amay nizonis menachosim, why would she be entitled to support out of his nechosim? In effect, he's a buyer. That means that we're dealing with a shibur, and you're dealing over here with nechosim mishabadim, and an almana doesn't collect from nechosim mishabadim. So that shows that she must be a yodish.
Even though this piece of property had the stamp on it that there's money here for an almana.
No, so if it was an aposiki, for example, if it was something where they designated to begin with, this particular field is the one that she's going to collect her ksuba from or her mazonis from, is one thing. But here we're talking about there's no such stipulation like that. We're just talking about stam that in general all of the nechosim of the husband are under a shibud to his wife for her ksuba. But again, the point is that when it comes to mazonis, yes, mazonis are tnoi ksuba, but she cannot collect them from the chosim mishabadim. Hypothetically, if the husband were to go and sell all his property to somebody else, and now it's under a shibud, and then he dies, she wouldn't be able to collect from it because she can't collect from the chosim shabadim for her support as an almana. And yet we're saying here that she can collect from her daughter's husband. That shows, says her papa, that shows that the husband must be considered a yodish rather than a lakeach. Abaya wonders why does Rav Papa even need to bring that proof? Ilav the Sholach Rovin Anan Lo Yadinan. You're telling me if Rovin hadn't sent this message, we wouldn't know this din? As it is, we can learn this din from a Mishnah, a Hatnan. We learn in a Mishnah in Bechoras. Elu Hein Sha'in Chozrin Beyovel. The following kinds of fields do not return to their owners in Yovel. Now, normally what you have is Reuven owns a property, you know, owns land in Eretz Yisrael. He sells it to Shimon, and it doesn't even matter. Shimon sells it to Levi, and Levi to Yehuda, etc. Right. But it comes Yovel, then it returns to Reuven. It returns to the original owner of the field. But that applies only to sales. It doesn't apply to other kinds of sales or gifts. It doesn't apply to certain other kinds of transfers. And so the Mishnah says, among the ones that don't return in Yovel, first of all, HaBechora, first of all, the Chelek Bechor doesn't go. That, now, when it comes to the other brothers, when it comes to the part that each brother gets in the estate, that the Gemara discusses in a couple of places that, yes, it does, at least according to some opinions, it does return to one another in Yovel. The Gemara discusses in some places, are the brothers considered one relative to the other? Are they considered like buyers or not? If they're considered like buyers, then it has to at least go back into a common pool and be redivided. It's machlokas rishonim whether it literally means that they actually have to do a fresh division like they did originally, and it may come out that each one is going to end up with a different piece of land than before, or whether it just means like we say symbolically almost, we're going to put it back all together into the common pool, and then each person is going to take the same piece that he had before, whatever. But the chelek b'chodah definitely doesn't go back in Yovel because it's called a matona, losses loy pishnayim. So it's not like a sale, it's rather like a gift. And the Mishnah continues, v'hayorish es ishtoi. Another case is when a man yarshins from his wife. So it's not considered a sale. Now the Gemara explains there. Now we learned earlier in the parak the whole what was the basis that a husband yarshins his wife. We were discussing, is it daraisa, and we brought various psukim indicating that maybe it is, but we said maybe it's dirabanan, and those psukim are only an asmachta. The Mishnah that we're quoting here from Masechta Bechoros holds that it's daraisa. And the same way as a Yodish doesn't return, the same way as a Yodish doesn't return the property. The same way over here, the husband doesn't return the property.
By Yovel.
Now, if you're telling me that the husband is not a Lekeach, otherwise he would have to return it in Yovel to his wife's family.
Can you repeat the last one?
So we're saying if the husband is considered a lakeach, then as soon as when he marries her and this property becomes his as nichsim alogo nichsitzon barzel, then one way or the other he first bought it when she was alive. He doesn't change status afterwards. So and he bought it in effect. He would have to return it in Yovel. Oh. The fact that the Mishnah says he doesn't implies that he's not a lakeach at all.
Alive,
no, yeah, he's still alive. Yeah. Yeah. So Abaye is asking, why is Rapapa having to prove from Rovin's letter that a husband is considered a lekeach when you have the answer right there in a Mishnah that he's not considered a lekeach, that he's considered a Yodish? Omalei Rava. So Rava answers back, Bahashta de Shalach, nu, and you could ask the this that we're saying that when he yarshins his wife, he's considered. He must be considered a Yodish, because again, if he was a Lakeach, then it should return in Yovel. So Tosfos explains somewhat differently the question is he considered a Lakeach? And the question is, what's the status when his wife is alive, and what's the status after his wife dies? So we said Robin's letter indicates that at least after his wife dies, he's considered a Yodish. But that doesn't prove anything one way or the other about what the status is while his wife is alive. So Abaye is saying, the Mishnah makes it clear that after the Mishnah already makes it clear that after his wife dies, he's a Yodish. So at least that particular detail, you didn't need Rovin's letter to tell us. We could learn it from the Mishnah. So Amalei Rava. So Rava answers back. Bahashta de Shalach nu. And now that Rovin did send that letter. And also we have from his letter that the husband is considered like a Yodish. Mi Adinan, do we in fact know that that is the state, that that is the situation? We actually have something else that indicates that he's not considered a Yodish. Va'amrab Yosi Reb Chanina, Ba'usha Hiskinu, they made a takana in Usha, which was one of the places that the Sanhedrin was located in during decades after the Churban. Before the Churban, we know, it says already, they left the Lishka Zagozes and went to Chanuyos, and here we are in the Harabayas, later on into the city of Yerushalayim proper, then to Yavne and so forth. You have 10 different places that they went to in that period shortly before and during the decades after the Churban, and twice they were in a city in the north of Eretz Yisrael called Usha. So Usha, that's the name of it. So yeah. So in Usha, his skinu, the Chachamim made a takana, her isha shemachra, but nichsim alug b'chaye baila. That if the wife sells some of these nichsim alug while her husband was alive, now these nichsim alug, the deal was supposed to be that because they're nichsim alug, right now the husband has only peiros. If she dies before her husband is going to yarshin them completely. Now that's the nature of nichsim alug. But if she dies first, if her husband dies, then the Yoshim are going to get it, and if she dies first, so one way or the other, in other words, the husband gets Paris while he's alive, and now we're saying that, if she sells it while she's alive, Umesa, and then she dies, and then her husband is supposed to get it, Habal Motzi Miyada Lekuchus, and the husband is entitled to take those Nechosim away from the people that she sold it to.
Yeah.
So the Rashbam explains, in other words, we're talking about she sold it with the understanding that if her husband dies before her, then the buyer is going to be entitled to keep them. But if she dies first, so she sold it on a condition. It depends whether I die first or whether my husband dies first.
That's a good question.
Wait. What she's saying is, she says like this, I'm selling this nichsim alug to you, a third party, on the following condition, says the Rashbam. If the husband dies first, and therefore he never has a chance to yarshin it from me, then fine, you, the buyer, get it exclusively. But if, on the other hand, I die before my husband, then my husband is supposed to yarshin me, so then you're going to end up losing out because he's going to end up taking it.
Good.
Now what we're saying is, so now when she dies, then the husband can take it away from the lekuchos. Achronim ask, actually, in that case, if a clear tnai was made on that, what's the chiddush? You don't need takana for that. So the Chassam Sofer explains, actually, he has a bit of a different girsa in the Rashbam, that is the actual tnai, that we say, that is the actual takana of the Chachamim, that we say as if such a tnai was made. In effect, that's what it means. In other words, when she sells the nichsim alug, implicitly, takonas usha was exactly that, that it depends whether she dies first or the husband dies first. Now we're saying, if she dies first, so isha abal motzi miyad lekuchos, the husband is able to take it away from the buyers. So therefore, that shows that he himself must be considered like a lekeach. If he was considered like a yodish, how could he take it away from the buyers? They bought it before the wife died. So says Rava, you're taking it as a given abaya based on the Mishnah and Bechordas and based on Ravin's letter that the husband is considered like a Yodish, but we actually see a case where the husband is considered like a Lekeach. So it's obviously not so simple. Ela Omer Ravashi. So Ravashi says, rather, you have to consider like this. Baal Shavinu Rabbonin Ki Yodish, v'shavyuhu Rabbonin Ki Yodish, v'shavyuhu Rabbonin Ki Lekeach. As far as the husband relative to his wife's Nechasim,
both.
Sometimes the Chachamim consider him like a Yodish, and sometimes they consider him like a Lekeach.
Yeah.
Different circumstances, different things. V'heich the tovolei ovdulei. So in each case, they do what's better for him, what improves his position. So therefore, Gabi Yovel Shavu Rabbanan Ki Yodish. When it comes to Yovel, the Chachamim made him like a Yodish, with the result being that way he doesn't have to return the land to his wife's family. So therefore, to that extent, we consider him a Yodish, and therefore, now, Tosva says, actually, it doesn't strictly speaking, we don't mean that the Chachamim made him. In other words, what it means is, in other words, that if we say, again, we were saying our Mishnah that we quoted before from Bechordas follows the opinion that anyway, a husband Yarshin's Daraisa, the Chachamim have no role to play in that. What we mean is the Chachamim did not change that. The Chachamim did not choose to override the Din Daraisa in that case. They left it as the Din Daraisa that he remains a Yodish. Because that's better for him, because that way he doesn't. Daraisa means from the Torah. Means from the Torah, as opposed to what the. The din daraisa, according to this way of looking at it, is that the husband yarshins his wife.
Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. So when it comes to that, then the Chachamim made him, or rather left him, like a Yodish. Because otherwise he's going to lose out, because otherwise it's going to have to return to his wife's family. Gabi did Rabbi Yosi Reb Chanina. In Rabbi Yosi Reb Chanina's case, when the wife sold the nichsa malug and then she died, shavur rabbanon kelekeach mishum seidi day. Then the chachamim make him like a lekeach, because then again he stands to lose out. Otherwise, if we make him like a yorish, he's not going to be able to get it back from the buyers, because they're going to say we bought it before she died. And you only yarshin her after she dies, and therefore we have the first claim. So therefore, so that he doesn't lose out, then the chachamim for that purpose made him like a lekeach. Well, therefore, so he says to them, look, I'm the earlier lekeach, you later lekeachim. So therefore, I have precedence. And Gabi did Rovin. In Rovin's case, where there's the almana who needs mizonis, shavur abonin kelekeach. On the other hand, in the case of Robin, you have to consider that there's an almana involved. She needs to not lose out. She needs to still be entitled to mizonis. Shavur abonin ki yodish, therefore the chachamim made him like a yodish, and that way it's true that in that case the husband is losing out, and in general we said we want to do something for the husband's benefit, but on the other hand we also have to be concerned for the loss of the almana. She has, after all, her tnai that she's entitled to, her tnai ksuba that she's entitled to these mizonis comes before her daughter getting married and the tnai ksuba that came with that. So therefore, so now she has precedence, and therefore we don't want to take that away from her. Therefore, we're going to consider, therefore, if the only way to do that is to consider the husband like a yodish, and therefore that allows the almana to collect from the nechosim, and it's not considered nechosim b'shabadim, then that's how we're going to do it. So Rav Ashi is saying, you can't say as a blanket statement, the husband is like a lekeach, yes, the husband is like a yodish. It's going to depend on the individual circumstances.
So we can also say that the lekeach, which he died when he divorced his wife, he still has to give her.
He has to give her ksuba. That's, he has to give. No, if he divorces her, he doesn't have to give her mizonis. He just has to give her ksuba. No.
Child support.
Child support is something else. We're not dealing with that.
Oh yeah. Okay.
So the Gemara asks, "Baha Gabi Rabbi Yosi Reb Chanina? What about in Rabbi Yosi Reb Chanina's case? You're telling me then that you don't want to prevent the almana, you don't want to cause a loss to the almana. Therefore, you're going to consider him like a yodish. Well, in Rabbi Yosi Reb Chanina's case, you also have somebody else who stands to lose out: the people who bought from the wife. You're telling us now the lakuchas. You're going to take it away from them and give it back to the husband, and they're losing out. Why shouldn't we also be concerned for their loss as well? So de'ikup seidu lakuchas v'shavur abonim kelekeach. Yet we just said that the chacham consider him like a lekeach. Why are we not concerned that they were going to lose out? So the Gemara answers, "Hosim inu de'afsidu anafshayu." Because in that case, we can say they caused themselves a loss. Kiven de'ikabal, they know that she's married, and therefore that this property is nichsimalug. Lo yiboy lahu lemizban meitsa deyasu tusagavra. They should have known better than to buy from a wife who's living together with her husband and who may yarshin her when she dies. So they're in effect, the Rashbam says, they're like playing a trick. They're trying to say we're gonna do an end run around it, and we're gonna, even though these nichsimalug by rights should go to the husband after the wife dies, we're gonna try to prevent that from happening because we're gonna buy it from her ahead of time. So therefore the chachamim say, we don't care, let them lose out. Let them lose out. So Tosfos discusses a little bit more about that, about the things that we learned about earlier in the parak about acharecha, things that where one person is entitled to the nechosim after the previous person passes away. So there we don't say that he lost out because he shouldn't have done it. So Tosfos compares with that and with various other Gemaras. One thing is that Rashbam says, now one thing we've left open then, we started with the question, Avua Bar Gniva had asked Rava the question, what happens when a woman borrows money and uses it for her expenses and then she gets married? Is the husband considered like a lekeach or a yorish? So we've answered all the various other cases that the Gemara has brought up to prove one way or the other. Okay. When we consider him like a lekeach, when we consider him like a yorish. What about that? Wait, what about that case? We seem to have, for the original question, we seem to have left it open. So the Rashbam brings from Rabbeinu Chananel, he says, we have to say mistabra. We would say logically, he would again be considered like a yodish because there the malva would lose out. It's one thing, in other words, where buyers bought the nichsimalug, knowing that it's nichsimalug, we don't want that. We don't care that they lose out because their fault, because they should have known to begin with to be careful. But where she borrowed money as a single girl and then she got married, there's no curl at the point. But on the other hand, we don't want them to lose out. They did her a favor and they lent her money.
Right.
So they don't want to, so we don't want to cause them to lose out. So the result is, in that case, we would have to consider the husband like a Yodish, such that they can collect from him, such that they can be Torah from him, even the Nechosim that are in the marriage now, that are the Nechosim Alug, because otherwise they're losing out and we don't want to cause that.
Yes.
Hadron Aloch Yeshnechlin. The next perek over here, the next perek Mishames, is going to continue on these dinim of Yerusha. Here we're going to focus more on things that happen. We're going to continue talking about things that happen after the father passes away. Here we're not going to be dealing with so much of the previous perek. We dealt a lot with where the father makes certain dispositions before he dies. Here we're going to be talking about where you have the default. There's no special dispositions. You just have the regular rules of Yerusha, but how we apply them in various circumstances. So the Mishnah says, Mishames, a person died. So v'yinech bonim bonus, he left sons and daughters. Now, again, the sons are the ones who yarshin. The daughters, midaraisa, don't get anything. But midrabanan, as we just learned before, the sons are supposed to support their sisters until they're old enough or they get married. So
again, too many people in one sentence. Okay.
Sons and daughters, midaraisa, the sons yarshin, the girls don't get anything.
Why?
Because
why?
That's how the Torah says it. That's how the Torah says it.
Okay.
But the sons are supposed to support their sisters. That's a takana de rabbanan. How far? Well, look, that takana de rabbanan may go back even to Moshe Rabbeinu. Whatever. Bizman shanachosim merubin. When the nechosim are a lot, and we're going to see in the Gemara what's considered a lot, then fine, no problem. Abonim yushu, the sons inherit. Vabonis yizonu, and the daughters get their mezonis until they're old enough or they get married or whatever. Nechosim muotin. What if the nechosim are not so much? And we're going to see in the Gemara what that means. Habonis yizonu, then the daughters are entitled to their mezonis. Vabonim yishalu al psochem, and the sons, if they don't have enough to support themselves, then they're going to have to go beg. They're going to have to go beg for a living. Because in other words, the fact that the daughters are entitled to mezonis, that overrides to a certain extent the yerusha of the sons. Admon says, I don't know about that. Would you say that because I'm a boy, then I lose out relative to the sisters? So Rav Gamliel says, you know what? What Admon says seems to be logical. So we're going to learn what we learned in Ksubas. We're going to discuss over here what exactly is Admon actually arguing with. Is Admon actually arguing with the Chachamim? Is he just saying, I understand, I accept what the Chachamim say, but doesn't seem logical? So that would also affect the question whether the halacha is like it. The Gemara mentions in Ksubas that wherever Rav Gamliel says Royani is divrei Admon, then the halacha would be like him. Would that mean the halacha would be like him in this case? Not necessarily over here. So Tosfos says, actually, first of all, the sugya over here follows the chachamim against Admon, as the Gemara is going to discuss. But second of all, also Tosfos points out, Rabbi Natan says, Admon is not really arguing. All he's saying is, I wonder, why did the chachamim make such takana that the mezonis of the daughters override even the yerusha of the sons to the extent where the sons are going to have to go beg for a living or something? Why do we do that? Anyway. So the Gemara starts off for Kama Merubin. What do we consider Merubin for this purpose? Amrav Yehuda Amrav, Kadeshi Yizonim and Elu Ve'elu. When there's enough that both the sons and the daughters are able to get their mezonis, are able to get their parnosa, which is expenses for clothing, and mezonis for food, then that's considered Merubin. Shnei Masa Chodesh, there's enough for all of them to be able to have that for 12 months. Ki Amrita Kameda Shmuel, but then Rav Yehuda says, after Rav passed away, Rav Yehuda became Shmuel's Talmud. So he says, when I told this over to Shmuel later on, when I became his Talmud, Omar, he says, Zudivir Rav Gamliel Bar Rebbe. That's what Rav Gamliel, the son of Rebbe, says. Ava Cham Omer, but the Cham say a different amount. Kadesh Yizonu Mehen Elu Ve'elu Ad She Yivguru. Menachosim Merubin. Now, our Mishnah is talking about is where the is where there's enough for them to be supported from with mezonis and parnasa until the girls become boigrus, until they become 6 months after their bas mitzvah. Anything less than that is not, so even though there's more than 12 months worth, but let's say the girl is only 7 or 8 years old, so you're going to need 4 or 5 years of mezonis for her, so then it would be considered nechosim mu'otin if we don't have enough for that.
Thank you.
And the Gemara says, Itmar Nami, they said also in the yeshiva, ki osa Rovin, when Rovin came from Eretz Yisrael, Amar Rav Yochanan, he reported in the name of Rav Yochanan, va'ami lo Amar Rav Abba Chana, Amar Rav Yochanan, others say that Rav Abba Chana said in the name of Rav Yochanan, When there's enough for them to be supported, the boys and the girls, until the girls become boigris, hen merubin, then that's considered nechos merubin. Pachas mikan. If it's any less than that, harelu muatin, then it's considered nechos muatin, and then you have the rule of our Mishnah that the girls get it earmarked for their purpose, for their needs, for their mazonis, and the sons, if there's nothing left, then you shall all upsakin. So the Gemara asks, 1 second, and we're saying that if there's not enough to support them until the girls become bogus, shakli lehubanis lekulu, are you going to tell me the girls get all the nechasim? Why? You're calling it nechasim u'atib, meaning you're saying that the boys are not going to get anything from it. But the question is, does that really mean the girls are going to get all of it just because there's not enough to support them, and there's not enough to support both the boys and the girls until the girls become begernis? Ella Omar Rava. So Rava says, rather, what it means is like this: Motzian lahen mizonis labonis ad sheyivgru. What we do is we take out, we divide, we earmark for the girls the amount that's going to be needed for their mizonis until they become bogus. Vashayu labonim. Whatever is left is for the sons. So what we mean is, in other words, when we say habonim yishal al psachim in the Mishnah, it doesn't mean right away. It means whatever is left after we earmark for the girls is available for the boys if they manage with that good. Once they use that up and they don't have any more of that, then you shall all upsach him from then on. Meanwhile, the girls have had earmarked for them the amount that they need until they become bogus in advance.
It doesn't write over the money for them to get married. That's what it's
so. What we're saying is that's what we're saying, that the girls are entitled to mizonis. So wedding expenses is something else. Wedding expenses are a separate thing. But here we're talking about mizonis expenses for day to day living and food and clothing and like that. Then they have until they become bogus. So they're entitled to have that earmarked for them until they become bogus. And if whatever's left after that, the boys are going to get. And if there's something left, then good. And if there's nothing left, then at that point, you shall all upset.
Right. So the girls have the power.
So the girls have more of the power over them
until they become
bogus. Like
to say.
Right. Well, because the idea is, the expectation is, by the time they're bogus, they're going to be married. You find in many places in the Gemara, the expectation was a girl would get married when she's a Naira. By the time she's a Bageris, she's considered kind of like an old maid. Right. So therefore, so by the time she's a Bageris, either she's married and her husband is supporting her, or she's old enough to go work for a living, and therefore Vita, her brothers don't need to be supporting her.
At that point, they divide up.
So the estate has already been divided up, because the boys get the estate to begin with. The boys just get the estate to begin with. The girls don't inherit anything. All we're saying is that we have to earmark out of the estate before we have to earmark enough for food and whatever for them. And then whatever's left, the boys are going to yaushin. And if there's not enough for them to live on for a few years or whatever, then eventually you shall all upset them. Eventually they're going to have to go back for them.
We say, okay, now you have to have money, give money for a wedding for them.
So weddings, actually, we're going to talk a little more later in the parak, but we're going to talk about the details of how we earmark for that. There's the concept of Isu Nechosim. There's different things of that. We're going to touch on that.
Depends
how many. Depends. Yeah, there's a lot of factors involved. Yeah.
Rabbi, excuse me, may I ask a question now?
Go ahead.